Will space debris prevent us from accessing orbit, and when could it happen? Is the universe, with all its rules, just a lucky accident? What does the publisher of Universe Today even do? Answering these questions and more in this question show. It's time for the question show. Your questions, my answers, as always, wherever you are. Across my channel, if a question pops in your brain, just write it down, gather them up, and I will answer them here. All right, let's get into the questions. John Seffel, what do you think will come first? Companies reducing the number of satellites in orbit or a catastrophic Kessler syndrome, leaving us unable to safely launch any more rockets? I think that neither of those things will happen first. I think that we will see a never-ending supply of satellites going into space, and that they will take, you know, the potential for a Kessler syndrome as just the, as one of the risks of doing business. And, you know, like the way we think about the Kessler syndrome, this is this idea that you're going to get this catastrophic runaway collision of satellites with other satellites, and eventually just Earth is surrounded by this shield of metal moving at 28,000 kilometers per hour, and that any rocket that attempts to fly away is going to go through like a buzzsaw of metal and just be torn apart, and that would kill all the astronauts on board. Like, that's not realistic. What is more realistic is that there will be this increasing damage likelihood that's going to happen to satellites, that the more debris that's up there, the more satellites that are up there, then there's going to be a higher chance of damage. The satellites are going to have to spend more time changing their locations, thrusting to avoid one another, thrusting to avoid debris. But it is not this sort of everything was fine and then it's not fine. It's just going to be this slow increase in risk and damage and destruction and expense. But you'll still always be able to leave planet Earth in a rocket, go quickly, don't loiter about, in the area where the largest amount of satellites are going to be. And it really depends on the altitude. That if you're in low Earth orbit, then, you know, like say the height of the International Space Station, like less than 500 kilometers altitude, which is where, say, the Starlinks fly, then anything that's in that area is going to deorbit within a couple of years, just automatically. So every chunk of space debris, if you like stop launching satellites, then within 5 years, low Earth orbit would be completely clean again. It's the higher altitudes where we have to be really careful. You know, once you get to 800 kilometers altitude, 1,000 kilometers altitude, then those things can hang around for decades, centuries, millennia. And once you reach geostationary orbit, then satellites will effectively remain there forever until, you know, interactions with the gravity of Jupiter kick them out into solar orbit. So I'm not so worried about the low Earth orbit. I'm much more worried about those higher orbits because they're so permanent. There's no cleaning that up. You can never go back. Once you have put up a lot of satellites into, you know, like where the GPS satellites fly, then any damage is permanent. But also space is really big there. And so you'll still be able to fly out and escape. But just any additional amount of material that we do is just this increased friction, this drag. It is this tragedy of the commons once again, where we've taken this thing that we share and made it worse, because we couldn't just agree and come to some sort of understanding of what is the wisest use of this thing that humanity shares. Matteo Barnstone, do you have any thoughts on the fine-tuning problem? It seems that there are three possible explanations. Design, lucky accident, and selection multiverses all seem equally implausible to me. Sure. So the fine-tuning argument, and this is like an argument that theists make for as one of the lines of evidence that they believe that the universe was created and not, didn't come about through some natural process. And because it feels like the universe was fine-tuned for life, fine-tuned for us, and that if the laws of physics were any different, then we wouldn't be here. And the universe mostly is awful. When you think about a habitable universe, I can imagine an infinite number of ways that this universe could be better. That if someone was sitting down and going like, what would be a great universe? This is not the one that they would come up with. The vast majority of this universe is emptiness, just space-time, just ripples of radiation moving through vast gulfs of space-time, that it's only in concentrations where you get stars, and they're not habitable, and then you get planets, and most planets are not habitable, and that the planet that we know of that is habitable, the Earth, the vast majority of the Earth is not habitable. There's just this thin little skin on the outside of planet Earth where things are habitable. And you can sort of look at the laws of physics and there, I forget the number, there's like 20-ish independent variables, which added together form the basic rules, mathematical, physical rules of the universe. And if you change any of them just a little bit, then you wouldn't get the universe that we have. The laws of physics wouldn't hold, planets wouldn't hold together, or maybe they'd fall apart, or maybe they'd crush into black holes or whatever, right? The universe is the very edge of habitability. It's not super habitable, it's just like barely habitable. And the greatest argument to this fine-tuning principle is the anthropic theory, right? That the lesser anthropic theory. And that is that if the universe wasn't this way, then we wouldn't be here to observe it. And so we could only make this observation that we live in a habitable universe because you need to have the rules, the laws of physics to make the universe habitable. You know, if you're flying in an airplane and you throw a dart out of the airplane and the dart lands at some random spot across the entire airplane's flight, the spot that gets hit is going to go, what were the chances that I got hit by the, well, someplace had to get hit by the dart. So yeah, you can't rule out anything. And I think where I have a problem with that argument, really a lot of these other kinds of arguments, is that it's used to try to close down inquiry, as opposed to, you know, having the, like, your basic agreed stance for any scientific question should be, I don't know, right? Like, that's it. That's where you start, is I don't know. Where do socks go in the dryer? I don't know. What is dark matter? I don't know. Where did the universe come from? I don't know. Why are cats the way they are? I don't know. And then you can slowly gather evidence until you come up with some kind of conclusion that has overwhelming evidence that meets one of these hypotheses. And so, you know, a lot of the times when a person is making an argument, a fine-tuning argument, or any of those kinds of even like basis for theistic arguments, they're coming from, you know, they're looking for evidence that matches their already existing hypothesis. And that's not the right way to do scientific inquiry. You have to just start with a blank, clean slate and just let the evidence guide you. Let nature reveal its secrets to you one at a time until you find out. It may be down the road that we figure out that that there is some kind of design to the universe. That would be surprising, but there's no evidence for it yet. Might be that there is some multiverse or simulation that where it's running every possible version of the universe. And so, of course, somebody has to live in one of them. But until any evidence is found, we will just have to remain and just say, I don't know, and be okay with that answer, right? Why are we here? I don't know. Where did the universe come from? I don't know. Where do we go when we die? I don't know. I don't know. Let's find out. If you want to support the work we do at Universe Today, consider joining our Patreon club. Your support lets us have a minimum of ads and no sponsorship messages. Patrons get no ads on universetoday.com for life. Want the extra parts of the live stream that aren't in this edited version? You can sign up for a special patron-only podcast feed and get the overtime segments as well as other special behind-the-scenes episodes, including our monthly patron-only question show. Thanks to everyone who has already subscribed and welcome to our recent newcomers, Jim, Rohan Minikin, Seb R., Jason Dulong, Ryan Smith, and Rich Audit. Join the club at patreon.com/universetoday. Richard Bergen Slane. Fraser, you describe yourself as the publisher of Universe Today. What does this mean? So Universe Today is a website. It is a space news website. It's like, imagine CNN or BBC or NBC.com, a website that has news, except it's news about space. right? That's Universe Today. And in the beginning, I was like the only person who worked for Universe Today. I was the writer, the publisher, technical support. I was the whole show. And then in the early 2000s, I started to bring on additional freelance writers. And so I would assign them story ideas. They would write the story. I would then put it onto the website, and then I would click the publish button, and then that web page would be updated with that new space news story. And so now we've got about 15 writers on Universe Today who work in varying amounts of business, freelance and more full-time people. And I don't write on Universe Today at all anymore because I'm too busy doing this. But also, really my job at Universe Today is to set the tone. I spend a couple of hours every day going through all of the news sources that I have collected over 25 years, all of the places where people publish scientific journals, various discussion forums, press releases coming from NASA and ESA and the European Southern Observatory and Nature and all the various sources of the news. And then I identify what I think are the most interesting stories for the perspective that I have about space. Like there's certain kinds of stories that I'm really interested in, really curious about, and I really want to find out more. And then we have an internal content management publishing system developed by Chad, who's the editor of This Question Show. And I put all these stories into this bucket. And then the writers can either write whatever they want, or if they're feeling starved for ideas, or have just come to rely on me completely, they will go to this tool, they'll pick one of the stories that I've identified, and they will claim it, and then they will write it. And so there's this really tight coupling between my curiosity and the kinds of stories that I'm really interested in and the kinds of stuff that we publish on Universe Today. And then we sort of use every part of the story. So often what will happen is, let's say it's Monday, I'll sit down, I will go through the list of stories, and I will see a new story is breaking. And the stories that I'm most interested in are the ones that we get exclusive, the ones that we get the scoops on. And I will throw that story into the system. And then one of the writers, let's say Matt or Evan or, will grab that story and they will write it up and they'll publish it on Universe Today. And then Anton, who is the video editor and sort of my producer, as he's preparing Space Bites to figure out which stories he wants to put in Space Bites, he will go through the list of stories on Universe Today, and then he will throw them into a list, an outline of what's going to be in Space Bites for this week. And then I will go and I will prepare and I will take the stuff, the notes that I had already made on the story, as well as the stuff that we had written about it on Universe Today, and then turn that into a story that I will then present with Space Bites. And then I will write it up for the newsletter. And so it's all comes together. And then often I will do these interviews and then I will give the transcript of the interview to one of the writers so that he can write an article on Universe Today about that story. So, there's a lot of overlap, but I think the thing that's happened in the last couple of years is that my personal perspective has made a much more not aggressive, is a more of the site that, I have a certain perspective about the kinds of stories that I think are going to resonate with the audience that I'm very curious about. And that then has turned into the kinds of stories that we tend to run on Universe Today. And I think we're getting this voice that I'm really proud of on the site. And it feels like we're kind of all now rowing in the same direction. And in fact, a lot of the writers now are anticipating the kinds of stories that I'm really into and just publish them right away. So as the publisher of Universe Today, I'm the guy who pays the bill for the server to keep the server up. I'm the guy who writes the checks to all of the writers and the video people and programmers and podcasts, the entire team at Universe Today. I'm the person who pays everybody salaries. And I'm the person who's at fault when everything goes wrong. I'm the person who gets the legal notices when there's some copyright infringement that's being claimed. I'm the guy who does the taxes for the corporation that runs Universe Today. I am the publisher. Jimero NT, how do you all of this and stay rested? So I don't stay, I stay pretty rested, but I do work really hard. And partly I work really hard because things are uncertain right now. They're more uncertain today than they've ever been, I think, in the realm of publishing. So we're seeing websites go out of business left and right. And anyone who is attempting to produce space news or any kind of news really has a high likelihood of going out of business, even though they've been around for a long time. And, you know, that's because advertising is a really bad way to support the work that you do. It was thought to be the best way, and it's turned out to be terrible. And, you know, personally, for Universe Today, the advertising revenue that we earn is down, I would say, 80% in 2 years. So, you know, take your paycheck and then knock 4/5 of that paycheck off, and that's the amount that you're left with. And yet you're still trying to do the best possible work that you can. And so we've been really lucky, which was, like, I realized that Patreon, like being directly supported by the fans is the only way to be sustainable, and that you then, whatever amount of money that you get supported by the fans or by the people who consume your work, that defines the budget. That's as much content as you're able to create. And as long as you don't spend more money than the revenue you bring in from the people who are actively enjoying the content that you create, then you get to keep doing this job. And why walk this knife's edge between how many people can I keep employed, and especially the refugees from these other companies that are going out of business? How do I keep those people employed in a time when my budgets are going down? And the solution is to work harder, right? To make more content, to get more creative, to put in more time, to be more organized, be more disciplined about the work that I do, because I can't directly control the minds of the people who work for me, but I can influence how hard that I work. And so I work really hard. And, you know, I haven't always worked this hard, but because we are going through this really difficult time, clearly the only way to do it is to work really hard. So how do I do it? I'd stay rested. I look at the bags under my eyes, right? I work really hard. Fab asks, how stable is the Patreon income? So it is much more stable now. At this point, Patreon is the other 80%. So 2,387 patrons-ish today lets me not go out of business. Like, just to be clear, if I didn't have Patreon, I would shut this website down. I would go get a different job. I would do something else. I'd probably be a tech executive, right? Like, that's my experience. That's my background. And because we have Patreon, I'm able to pay everybody's salaries. Because we have Patreon, I'm able to pay the video editor who produces all those really cool graphics. And without Patreon, for sure. But there's still a little bit that's left with the advertisement that is, you know, I have to sort of go like, oh, is this the month that I cut off the ads? No, I can't quite afford it. And so I have to endure the ads and endure the punishment from various advertisers until I can finally cut that off. And this thing that I'm going through, you know, the duck with its feet going really, really quickly, this is the experience that every creator who you are a fan of, who seems genuine and seems to be doing their thing and is not wildly successful, like is not Mr. Beast, this is the amount of energy and effort that they're putting into this. And most of them. And so, like, the biggest thing is just like, take your money, whatever you think is for the value that you get, and then spread that among the creators who make the stuff that you most enjoy. And just audit that every month and just think like, oh, I used to really watch a lot of this guy, but now I watch that woman over there. And so now I'm going to shift to her Patreon from his Patreon or whatever. But just try to support directly the work of the creators that you really enjoy, because they mostly are doing this job because they can't help themselves, because they can't not do it. I hate ads so much. Every time I look at my website and I see ads, I just wince. and like the number of ads and what the ads look like and the content of the ads. It's just, I hate it so much. But I also would have to lay off people if I cut those ads, and I don't want to do that. Or I would have to cut back the hours of everybody, and I know that they're struggling. So this is where we're at. And so I think we are, we're like this close, like 6 months, I feel, we'll be in this place where I can cut off the ads, and then we're just Patreon and we're just smooth sailing, he says, you know, which we know is not true. All right, those are all the questions that we had in this episode. Thank you, everyone, who asked your questions, both in the YouTube comments, as well as everybody who showed up for the live show. Now, we record this show on Mondays every week. There will be the time for the next show somewhere here on the channel, so just make sure you sign up to get notified. All right, I'm going to talk about a way to get more questions answered, but first, I'd like to thank our patrons. Thanks to Abe Kinson, Adam Schaefer, Andrew Gross, Bear Lake Roofing, David Gilton, David Mass, Dennis Liberty, Dustin Cable, James Clark, Jeremy Mattern, Jim Burke, Jordan Young, Josh Schultz, Paul Rohrbach, Sean Sargent, Spiderswap.io, Stephen Fowler Munley, Thomas Hill Squadron, and Vlad Shipley, who support us at the Master of the Universe level. And all our patrons, all your support means the universe to us. So when I am recording this episode, it is a couple of days away from me putting out the call for the patrons only question show. And this is where anyone who is a patron of us can ask a question. And then me and my producer Anton go through all of those questions and answer them all. And the show lasts 3 to 4 hours. And it's because, you know, we're able to just take our time and just get through every single question. And so, you know, during the live shows, during, you know, in the YouTube comments, for sure, I know that I am only able to get to a tiny fraction of the questions. And so we make up for that with the Patreon question show, where we answer them all. And in fact, I get a little more time to do some more research in advance. And so I come up with really good comprehensive answers. And Anton, who has a physics degree, is a really great counter to my perspective on things. And I think people really enjoy the question show. So if you want to absolutely guarantee that you're going to get a question answered from me every month, then definitely go and join our Patreon and then submit your question when I put out the call for the question show. So go to patreon.com/universe today. All right, we'll see you next time.